From RunAsRadio.com, you're listening to Run As Radio, the internet audio talk show for IT professionals with Richard Campbell. This is Brandon Wen announcing show number 518, Scaling in the Cloud with guest Corey Sanders, recorded Monday, January 30th, 2017. Run As Radio is produced each week by PWOP Productions, providing professional media and podcasting services online at pwop.com. You can follow us on Twitter at twitter.com/runasradio.
Thank you, Brandon. This is Richard Campbell, and thanks for listening to Run As Radio. While this is a new guest for Run As, not a new guest for me, I'm bringing back Corey Sanders, who visited us over in .NET Rocks a while back, and he's been a member of the Azure team since 2010 and been with Microsoft since 2005, and currently the Director of Program Management responsible for the engineering and business of compute in the Azure team, and that includes all Windows VMs, Linux VMs, Service Fabric, Event Hub, Service Hub, Batch Computing, and the compute technology to support large Microsoft services like Bing and Office 365. Welcome, sir.
Wow, that is a mouthful of an introduction, I'll tell you.
You know what it hits me when you talk about like the Bing Office 365 thing is I think back before it was called Azure, and there was that whole conversation about Microsoft has this half a dozen or so big properties, right? The Bings and MSDN and so forth. And they each have their own infrastructure, and it's kind of a nightmare.
Yeah.
And so to come up with a common infrastructure across them all, I think it's pretty powerful, right? It's important.
Yeah. You know, it's amazing how much we learn from our internal, you know, partners and customers.
Sure.
Just the usage patterns and the way in which they think about cloud and cloud infrastructure. You know, it turns out in some ways it's very, very similar to where sort of a lot of our customers are going.
Sure.
But I
wonder if the Microsoft groups aren't some of your worst customers, like just hard on your systems, very demanding, like super challenging customers.
That's right. And they all have a direct line with our management.
They know where you live. They're going to get to you.
They know me and they know how to get it.
Yeah. If they have to wait in the lobby and trip you up, they're going to.
Yeah, exactly. No, they are. They can be some of the hardest. They can be, they definitely are some of the hardest customers we have just because, you know, in some ways there's aspects of, you know, they don't have a choice, but
no.
they certainly have a lot of demand.
Yeah, and all the reason to be more demanding that they're expected to use this, so they should demand it to be great because it directly affects their ability to deliver on their promise to their customers.
That's right. That's right. So it is it's great though. It's an absolutely great experience. We have good relationships across all those teams, and you know, like I said, we learn a ton about just how to think about computing from those guys.
Yeah, no kidding. And dog fooding is the Microsoft way. You know, certainly over on the dev side, it's always been like Windows Presentation Foundation didn't get great until the studio team took it on and really kicked the snot out of it.
You know, that's right.
Suddenly it was a dramatically better product.
The original, you know, business model was Windows shipped and then Office was built on it, and
yep.
Office was like the big app to test out Windows. And so,
yep.
You know, it's kind of been the way of the world for us for a long time.
For sure. It's just a shift to these other things. So I think you're in a very cool part of the company. I mean, the Azure space and what's going on with stuff like Office 365, it's hard to be anything other than excited.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that's also why we only hire really cool people. I was the exception.
I was the exception to that rule.
But no, it's I think the biggest difficulty that we have with being in this space and this part of the company is there's no shortage of new ideas.
Yeah.
This is, you know, this is not a space where everything's been tried already. In fact, it's a space where almost nothing's been tried.
Yeah. And as a customer, let me try you. Trying to figure out what you guys are making, it's like drinking from a fire hose. Like, you're coming at us hard.
Yes, indeed. And that's part of our job. I think that's what you're expecting from us.
Yeah. I would like it if they were more organized, if I can make any suggestions at all. It's like, it's good to have a plan, but yeah, it's trying to sort all the different things out. There's a lot of ways to solve problems, but that's also a Microsoft tradition. If there's not three ways to do something, you haven't been trying hard enough.
We do try and limit that down. We are trying to be a little bit more prescriptive on, you know, gosh, here's when this solution is the right thing for you. You know, this is when you should use functions. This is when you should use VMs and so on. But yeah, you're right. There's certainly a challenge of just having a lot of solutions to do the job you want to do.
When I think different organizations are in different places too. Like, we've all talked about this whole, you're going to go to the cloud because it makes it easy to scale. But right. Then what do you scale? Like, I've scaled a lot of systems over the years, right? I worked in the dot-com boom and so forth long before the public cloud. And scaling is never simple. Like, there's stuff involved. And just because you have sort of ubiquitous computing doesn't mean you can't hamstring yourself somewhere with trying to scale systems up.
Yeah, absolutely. And this is, you know, as we were talking about, we learn a lot from our internal partners, but then certainly a lot of external folks as well. You know, the way I like to think about sort of how that scaling is approached is both at the infrastructure layer and the management of the infrastructure. And then, of course, the application layer as well. And so when you look at something like the infrastructure, you know, when you have three nodes or four nodes that are hosting, let's say, a SQL Server cluster of some kind, or MySQL cluster, or Postgres, or what have you, you can go in and you can muck with each individual one. You can go, oh, this one's not working well. Let me go work on it. Let me go change it, so on and so forth. But when you're dealing in the thousands, there's no mucking of nodes.
No,
right?
this is the cattle approach, not the pets approach.
That's right.
Yeah,
that's right. And this is where, you know, when we look at even some of the capabilities we have on Azure, we try and actually differentiate this so that, you know, customers, developers, IT pros, system administrators can sort of look at the platform with those different lenses, because they actually result in different actions. And this is our distinction between VM support and VM scale set support, which is kind of that split between sort of a loose VMs versus scaling as a unit.
All right, we got to talk about this, because obviously when I think VMs and the sort of simplest level of scaling, now it's really cloud as other people's computers, right? And I'm just going to put my VMs and I'm responsible for everything related to scaling. What's a scale set and how does that relate to VMs?
Yeah, totally. So, you know, a VM scale set is basically a single entity. So think of it as a single object. And one of the characteristics of that object is the count of instances you want deployed.
Nice.
And so what that means is that instead of going in and saying, create a VM, go install something, go install it again, go now connect them, blah, blah, blah.
Right.
Right. It's basically saying, here's my template. Here's my blueprint, as it were, for what each VM should look like. What's going to be installed? What executables run when you create them? What's the networking characteristics? What's my load balancing story?
Okay.
And you build that once, and then you say, hey, you know what? Azure, I want 200 of these. Go.
Nice. So this is stuff I would have done myself anyway, right? It's just instead of me cooking up the scripts and the processes to run up that 200 instances, you're going to do it for me. I'm going to give you a template, tell you how I want to connect together, say, now make me 200, and off you go.
Exactly. And there's some clever things that we do there. In fact, even today we are announcing, we now support this up to 1,000 instances. So you can go up to 1,000 instances. And so super exciting, but we do some clever things. So like when you say, look, I want 1,000 of these, you know, when you're deploying on that much infrastructure, sometimes, hey, one of the machines may be a little bit slower than expected, or one of your scripts may not have worked quite right, right? And so what we do is we actually spin up more than 1,000. So if you say I want 1,000, let's say we spin up 1,200. We only charge you for the 1,000,
right?
But first 1,000 that are available, we give to you, and then we kill the rest. And so it just dramatically improves your experience in spinning these things up. These are little clever things that we can do because we know you're spinning them up as a unit versus you went in and manually spun up each individual one.
Yeah. So it's actually going to be more, I mean, I'm just trying to imagine 1,000 G5s. Like, holy man, dude, what's your problem? Like,
That's a lot of power, man.
Yeah, just like, I'm trying to consume all the Bitcoins in the world.
I'm going to shut down Bitcoin as we know it.
This is it, right?
Like, yeah,
that
there
is
you go.
Wild. Yeah,
we should start this business.
Although maybe the H's, though, the specialty memory model ones might be the actual better. But yeah, 1,000 is okay. You officially set the number at more than you need.
This was the goal. Now I'll tell you, candid, that there are some customers out there that want more.
Wow.
So we probably aren't stopping at 1,000. But I do think 1,000 is going to meet a lot of customer needs and expectations.
Yeah, you're not going to need 1,000 for websites. I don't care what website you are. That's a
big 1,000 G5s is a very big website.
Yeah, that's a big compute problem, whatever it may be, right? Like that, they're mm-hmm. pretty awesome. But okay,
yeah.
So, but I like this idea that very much configuration to code mentality, because you know, you being the Azure folks, that these are all supposed to be the same. You're just going to do that for me.
That's right. That's right. Yeah, and it simplifies a lot of the management, mm-hmm. which is the goal. When you're dealing in units of, you know, even hundreds, but especially thousands, just having to deal with deployment, you know, having to deal with OS patching. Like, we do have capabilities for you to just kind of roll through an OS patch for these guys. And even actually managing of storage becomes a real nightmare. So one of the things that we are also releasing is a new capability called managed disks. And this, my friend, takes away all the management pain of storage. And so it simplifies this at scale deployment. You no longer have to worry about any storage accounts or anything. You just say, I want 1,000 managed disks associated with these 1,000 VMs. Go.
Wow.
And away we go.
Okay. So just treat it as yet another service. Is this store simple or?
No. So this is basically a new object that we are supporting that, you know, today you spin up a VM you attach, you know, data disks or what have you. And these are backed by storage blobs, right? And they're VHDs in your blobs. So imagine this is it's a new object that we basically abstract away that storage blob in the background.
Okay.
We manage it, we maintain it, and all you have to worry about is what does my disk do and where does it go?
Nice.
It's super cool, man. And it takes care of availability.
Yeah.
So it now will span multiple storage stamps to give you high availability. It takes away the public endpoint of the storage stamp. So it is a super cool progression in our platform. And the timing for me to be able to talk with you about it right now is just perfect.
So this is just announcing right now. I mean, again, if we're talking about 1,000, like what am I putting on all that storage? Like that's different between these instances. Like normally I want a shared storage for configuration or, you know, maybe they're working from a common file set, but is it just like the local working files, those kinds of things that I need to have replicated across all those instances?
Yeah, you know, the most common scenarios for that type of scale out with storage is going to be, you know, some of the sort of scale out replication systems. So things like Cloudera, you know, Hadoop-based solutions or DataStax.
I was thinking Hadoop.
Which Cassandra, sort of a replication to your nearest neighbor. These sorts of eventual consistent systems are perfect in that type of environment, and they just scale and grow and scale and grow.
Yeah, but it still seems awfully bare metal-y or IaaS. Like, I mean, I understand that folks are coming from that point of view, but I still feel like today, if I have to build VMs, like there's got to be a better way. I don't want to own the OS. I don't want to own these instances. I want to go higher on the stack than that.
Yeah. So this is what's also interesting. VM scale sets is actually the underlying platform for services like Service Fabric.
Really?
And the container service. Yeah, these guys are built on top of VM scale sets. So it's a great way to visualize how sort of the PaaS services like Service Fabric sit on top of this underlying infrastructure management.
Okay. So, I mean, part of this is you're just exposing the way that Service Fabric runs now so that we can take advantage of pieces of it.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, basically, you know, Service Fabric is that platform layer or that container orchestration layer.
Yeah.
And it's sitting on top of a bunch of VMs. And, Service Fabric also didn't want to manage all of the VM scale and you know, application deployment and so on. So Service Fabric relies upon VM scale set to do that.
No, that totally makes sense.
Is it all coming together for you now?
No, this is like I'm very excited about it.
I've ever explained this well to you, I guess.
But I'm also looking at different problem spaces. Like, you would never build web services this way because there's web apps for this, and they've got their own ability to scale. It's when you get into sort of unique compute problems. And, I mean, I dig Hadoop, and I've done some good things with it, but I still think there's better machine learning solutions in different ways to do MapReduce. It would be a simple solution to that. Service Fabric, to me, seems like that pure platform play. I don't want to own any OSs. I don't want to own any plumbing, you know, at all. I don't want to be responsible for it or anything. I'm just going to give you some code to run for me and then tell you how big to run it.
Yep, that's right. That's right. And the nice thing about Service Fabric is we've also recently added container support.
Okay.
So like Windows containers now can be run on top of Service Fabric as sort of your microservice platform or as your container orchestrator. So it's pretty cool from that perspective.
So Service Fabric is not mutually exclusive from containers. You don't have to do just containers or Service Fabric. They kind of get along.
Correct.
Okay, that's cool.
You know, Rich, the way I like to think about containers, they're sort of ubiquitous, right? They're going to be everywhere.
It's going to fundamentally change development going forward. Like, it really
does. That's right. You can't leave your house in the morning without seeing containers. That's my new...
Your car's running containers. They're in your phone. They're everywhere.
They're in my phone. They're in my car. They're everywhere.
I love it.
We should make a horror movie about this.
That's right. Containers are everywhere. Corey, give me 1 second here to pay the bills because this episode of Run As is brought to you by IT Edge Intersection. IT is transforming and the techniques and tools you've used for the past decade or more are less relevant. It's all changing. Cloud services are a reality, automation is penetrating all aspects of operations, and software is being delivered faster than ever. It's no longer a safe bet to just sit and do what you've been doing. But there's no reason to panic. The experts at IT Edge Intersection are here to help you understand how to use these new technologies, new approaches, and new techniques, all with a real-world focus that acknowledges the realities that you deal with every day. Make your job easier and up your value to your organization by attending IT Edge Intersection in Orlando, May 21st to 24th. Use the code RUNAS to get a discount on your registration at itedgeintersection.com, and I'll see you there.
That sounds fun. Should we be going to that?
You are going to that. I don't know that you are, but there's a whole bunch of Microsoft folks going there. I think my keynote is Mr. Guthrie, actually.
No way.
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah. And Mr. Guggenheimer be there. Just heard Donovan Brown's coming in as well. So we're going to get a little DevOps on it.
Oh, gosh, Donovan. I love that guy.
He's a powerhouse, man. It's a monster lineup. And we're very, very happy to see that coming together.
It sounds like you're missing someone quite special, though.
Booyah.
I think, where I was going.
We should have a conversation about that, I think. I think we could probably arrange that. Because, see, you know, the container story on development is one thing, but from an IT perspective, this is very interesting, right? Because I'm working really hard to get to a place with applications that I'm responsible for operating where we don't update anything anymore. New instances are built, workloads are transferred, and the old instances are shot. And containers seem perfect for this.
Yes, indeed. Yeah. You know, this is what's so funny about containers. They've taken on such a life of their own where, as you say, you know, I think that they are going to drive a bunch of next generation development in sort of the whole microservice movement.
Yep.
But some of the most common usages that I see today in sort of IT shops, in enterprises, in small, large companies, et cetera, is effectively containerizing existing infrastructure.
Well, that's a big question because so much of the way the containers are described, it seems like a greenfield implementation. I got to go all the way back to dev. We want to rethink the way we build our app. You're now going to do it in containers. But to be able to pick up existing workloads, put them in containers, that to me is super interesting because it does open the door to this, you know, configuration as code mentality top to bottom. It's still a battle to really automate the construction of a service from the VM through the OS, all the patching, all the apps. Like, it's just a lot of stuff. The more of that stuff I could eliminate, the happier I am.
That's right. And I think you're spot on. I mean, I think, you know, the microservices application model is the model that requires rethinking. But just containerizing, you know, I see lots of solutions where, hey, I'm taking basically what used to be a full VM.
Right.
And I'm going to containerize it. And the reason I'm going to containerize it is one, portability.
Yep.
You know, two, just agility, the ability to start it very, very quickly.
Yeah.
Right. And then three is just mobility. You can now move these guys around. You're not dealing with VHDs or VMDKs. You know,
you're not dealing with those old
file formats.
Yeah. They're not so bloody huge. That's the issue, right? They're so big. And I'll tell you this, as a guy who scaled stuff in the cloud before, it takes long enough to light stuff up. I've never really done that automated elasticity. We've got a big weekend coming up. I just over-provision. I light up extra instances because when they're not taking load, they don't cost me much. And I can't wait, right? I don't want any delays. As the load comes up, I want enough instances already waiting there.
It's like when this show airs,
yes,
you're going to need like 3-4x your normal traffic
and
just to handle.
Right?
Yeah.
That's all we're really doing is we're guessing. And so we tend to guess high. And maybe I'm spending a bit more money than I should. We could argue that, but it was already a good weekend. We could probably afford it. But this sort of promise of automated elasticity that, hey, as the load goes up, you're just going to light up new instances to keep up with the load. I'd like to see that come true.
Yes. Yes. Wouldn't it be just amazing if the by default startup time of your app just across the board became, you know, seconds versus minutes?
Yes.
And even sub-second. I mean, you know, millisecond to spin up and scale. And you can go from 1 to 100 and, you know, in a second. It just changes the entire dynamic of what your app needs to do, how it needs to think, and complexity that you need to build inside. And then management. Like, I mean, the management difficulties of that. Suddenly you're not, you know, you're never over-provisioned. You're not out of whack with your scale or your patching or what have you. It's just, I mean, that is really the future. It's just a question of how fast we can get there.
Yeah, and what that really looks like. Right? It doesn't, you know, the part of it is, does it make sense? Now that I'm I'm very much at this OpEx model where it's just, we only spend extra money on the weekend because we expected it to be busy. You've got to sort of see the, you know, are you getting value for money here? Does it make sense to over-provision? You know, what am I going to save if I get really good at this? But I love this idea. You know, the biggest class of problem that I got rid of when we started playing with containers is the way the dev was working on the app is dramatically different than the way it runs in production. And there's a whole bunch of problems that happen when you try and move from one to the other. So when everybody lives in containers all the way down to the code monkey actually writing the individual feature, it's just a whole bunch of issues that just disappear.
And you're not dealing ever with the... It worked on my laptop, but not on the server in the cloud. I mean, that is just like even just taking that problem away is just a beautiful, beautiful progress.
You suddenly live in a different world. So still with a website, I would tend to look at a web app. And when you really talk about microservices, isn't that the domain of the logic app in the Azure world? Like if a guy really wants to build a microservice now, have nothing. It's just, here's your code.
Yeah. So you know. And this, I think this is the way, you know, most people think of it, but I don't care. I'm going to tell you what I think. the you know, microservices is a application model format, approach to building applications, right? Yes. And it's effectively each individual part of your app completely stands alone, right? It completely lives on its own and it can be updated on its own. It can scale on its own, et cetera. Now, in Azure, there's actually, you know, or even just in the broader cloud, there's a lot of ways to approach that type of application model. So one, we talked a little bit about Service Fabric. This is one that, you know, I'd always kick off with from a microservices perspective.
Sure.
It's platform geared towards that level of granularity, subdivision, being able to manage updates and version control across those many microservices.
And very discrete scalability, right? Just
exactly, and it enables also a stateful approach to those microservices, which can be really powerful, especially for a lot of, you know, tier one apps and so on. So that's super cool. You can also do microservice based architectures in other ways. So, you know, like you said, whether it be using sort of a set of smaller solutions, app service, or whether using web apps or building it with functions, right? You can sort of piece together a microservice based application that way as well.
Yep.
Now, when I look at something like Logic Apps, I feel is more, it can take components of a microservice-based solution, but it ends up being more of a workflow type approach.
I see.
And enables sort of, you know, if this, then that, if that, then that type approach. And so it's still super valuable. In fact, from an IT pro system administrator perspective, I think Logic Apps is one of our most powerful services. A visual workflow is so cool.
It's really interesting.
But anyway, sorry, I digress.
But in a good way, because, you know, again, you bring up this idea of if you deeply immerse yourself in this Azure landscape, you recognize that different pieces of an overall application are going to run in different services most effectively. And that might be a problem for you, because I also see organizations like, no, I want a uniform architecture in terms of its encapsulation. And that's where something like maybe containers make sense. It's like, okay, well, everything's in a container. You just want containers? We can just do containers for you.
Yeah, that's right. And, you know, I think you'll see more and more of our dev tooling and our management tooling, both sides of the house, really center around that. So that point, right, with the assumption that, hey, you know, with containers, I no longer have to worry about runtimes or, you know, language controls or any of that.
Yeah.
It's all taken care of for me. Suddenly, all I need to worry about is getting my container to the right platform. And I think that's really going to be a strong directional path for us.
Yeah, very powerful. And certainly conversations I've been having on other shows have been stuff like, does containers make sense with databases? Like, yeah, actually it does. You have a separate instance for the file store and you can literally do a data database update and not change the file store in the process. It'll just flip across. Like, that's the interaction between containers gets very cool when you start looking at a large scale application.
That's right. That's right. It really is, in some ways, sort of the next generation infrastructure.
Right.
Right. You know, you could do all that with VMs, and now you can do it with containers, and it just enables a bunch of new stuff, just like VMs enabled a bunch of new stuff. Right.
Sure.
And so I think it's going to be really powerful. Is it going to fully replace VMs? No, probably not.
Nah.
Right. I think there's still going to be a few things that fit into that, a bunch of things that fit into that sort of mold. But, you know, I think applications will consist of both for a long time.
Sure. I could see that there's going to be constraints, especially when you're talking about an existing out. There are
right,
things
true.
That you're allowed to do in containers and things that you're not. And some apps are just going to be, well, this has got certain behaviors that containers just can't deal with. So this piece needs to continue to live in a VM. Those pieces can move to containers.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. And just, I mean, just like any sort of collection of, and you mentioned it already, collection of services and capabilities, they're going to come together to give you sort of the final output.
Right.
And I guess my biggest recommendation is you got to just be open to the different solutions and choices that you have, and then make sure you're picking the right ones for the job and the constraints you've got. Because it's, you know, the goal for all these services is just to make management, make operations, and make, in some cases, development easier.
Right. Reliable, scalable, behaves correctly. Does that mean we're going to have a scale set for containers at some point, or is that just native and built in?
You are, well, so you're getting a little ahead of me, I can neither confirm nor deny plans around that.
But if one were to speculate, it's kind of a logical path, really, isn't it?
Oh,
it's so good to not be in the company.
Are you looking for a job or what?
If I have a job, then I really can't talk about that. But I don't have a job, so I can.
Is this not a job? Am I going to get paid for this? I thought I was getting paid. Just kidding.
Does anybody get paid for this?
Yeah, I guess not. But anyway.
Nice.
What I'd say is this. It's definitely a natural progression. The other thing I'd say is that, you know, even today with our VM scale set, you can directly deploy container-based solutions onto those VM scale sets.
Nice.
Using the startup scripts. And so you're still buying at the VM granularity, mm-hmm. but you can deploy using the container deployment language straight away. So it's sort of a bridge
right.
to where that bridge is going. You know, only time will tell.
Yeah, it's hard to know exactly what will be available when, but it's clear that all of this is in motion. It's just a question of being able to think through how granular you want to be, how you want to manage all of that. I mean, I got to think that's a challenge. When you get 1,000 of anything, that is a management challenge.
It is. And that's, you know, part of the things that we hope to support and improve upon, you know, things like enabling much easier patching of the OS,
right.
enabling much simpler application deployment on those 1,000, right? Even adding sort of a very primitive application model on those 1,000 for like health and so on. We think that's going to be really important to be able to use these as an optimal way. And so you'll see those over even the next 6 months, you'll see a lot of that stuff come to light.
That's cool, man. I think it's going to be exciting times and more of the same. And we can always find you at Tuesdays with Corey.
You can. Yeah. Yeah. It's not anywhere near as popular or successful as the current show I'm on.
I don't know if that's true.
It's, you know, but it is shorter. I just don't have the intelligence to make 30-minute shows. They're somewhere between 5 and 10, and they always have demos. So
yeah.
I try and show off a bunch of Azure stuff.
Well, here we are 30 minutes later. Clearly, you can make one.
Well, that was mostly your help. So that was,
exactly.
I chalked that up to you. So.
I don't know. I found there are times where I wonder if I can get a word in edgewise with you, Corey. You move pretty fast.
Is this like a normal interview? Am I talking more than I should?
No, you're supposed to talk more. You're the guest. That's the point.
Well, I felt bad. I kept interrupting you and telling you that you were wrong and all that stuff.
Okay, yeah. Don't worry. We edited all that out. You all sound smart. That's how this works. Corey, always a gas to talk to you. We had a great time on .NET Rocks. Now we've had a great time on Runners Radio. Come back anytime.
I definitely will. You say the time, the place. This time there was no red wine.
There
so that was a little bit of a disappointment. But,
The nature of remote recording. I'll do the best I can.
Next time, please ship it to me. Thank you.
You bet.
Thanks, man.
And we'll talk to you next time on Run As Radio.